Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Today we are going to talk about preg testing. It is the middle of August here in central South Dakota, and we have seen some drier conditions than normal, and so wanted to talk about preg checking maybe a little bit earlier than we normally would on our cow-calf operations, just because that might be one way that we can conserve some feed resources or deviate some feed resources to different groups of cows accordingly. And so to do that, we're going to be joined by a guest today from North Dakota, but originally a South Dakota native. And so we have Dr. Lacey Quayle with us from North Dakota State University Extension. And I'll let her give her full introduction here so we can get it kicked off.
Taylor, as you mentioned, I'm Lacey Quayle from the North Dakota State University, and I'm a livestock management extension specialist housed out of the North Central Research Extension Center in Minot, North Dakota.
Awesome. So, Lacey, where did you do your schooling and what did you focus on when you were down there?
So my bachelor's is from South Dakota State University in animal science and got involved with some undergrad research when I was there. So I pursued graduate school at Texas A&M University to study reproductive physiology. And so both my master's and my PhD were focused on studying fertility in cattle and how we can maybe tell some differences between cattle that are going to be most reproductively efficient and some that maybe are less reproductively efficient. And when we know that, the sooner the better, right? So we can make our herds more efficient. So that's a very condensed way of what we studied, what our lab group studied. But and really enjoyed it and love all things reproductive physiology.
And now up in North Dakota, you do all livestock management, like you said. So do some beef, do some multi-species work, but we like to pull her down to help with AI schools as well. So if you have seen her or heard her talk before, you're probably not mistaken that she is a familiar face at some of our SDSU extension programs as well. But like she said, she focused on reproductive physiology. And so she's always a good person that I like to peg on for the most current research or some of the products going on. So when we talk about preg check, we know that there's several different ways to do it. If you're, a vet clinic that you work with, let's say, always does palpation, or maybe one always does ultrasound, there's some different timing aspect in each of those. And so this year, like I said, we might be wanting to do that a little bit earlier. So maybe it is a case of comparing those two options and asking for one or the other. Lacey, what do you think are some of the pros and cons of doing, palpation versus ultrasound?
I think maybe to take one step further back, right, and just the benefits of preg checking in general, and having that relationship with your herd veterinarian and implement that practice, just because it's open cattle are such a strain on profit from both the income and the expense side of the equation, right? They're expensive from a feed perspective, which you mentioned, and especially in drought, we might want to change that. But then on the revenue side, they're not carrying that calf for the next year. So we have strains from both sides of the equation, which really make them a profit sink. And so if we can identify them as early as possible, right, that's going to be the best scenario, right? But there's management considerations and logistics that go into that. So you mentioned palpation versus ultrasound, and again, the veterinarians that you're working with, like maybe they do offer both, or maybe they offer one, or whatever. Like you mentioned, there can be reasons for that. But physiologically, there's, I guess the what's being addressed, or maybe the questions that you need answered, are different, right? So if you are a producer that really just needs to know who's pregnant and who's open for culling reasons, that's something that, that's just one question, right? Pregnant or open, versus if there's other management considerations you need to account for, like fetal age, if you AI'd and then turn cleanup bulls in, After you AI'd, there's going to be calves at multiple different stages, regardless of your breeding, breeding scenario, right? Or how you handle breeding management. And so if that's something that whether your marketing options really depend on that, and knowing calf age and different stages of pregnancy, whether you need to know calf sex for, again, for marketing reasons, or just to try to plan your calving seasons. If you calve in different groups and you want to know the cows that are going to be much closer to calving than others, right? That's something that is another. My mind works in flow charts, right? So that's one step further down the flow chart than just knowing who's pregnant and who's open. And so finding the method of pregnancy testing that addresses all the questions that you need answered is going to be kind of the most important thing. So back to your original question of palpation versus ultrasound. Technically, palpation can be done around 35 days, but you'll find that's very, really variable, right? And depending on the veterinarian, and they might say we start palpating at this period of gestation, so make sure that your bulls have been pulled for at least this many days. So that's going to be variable and very dependent. And so that's always something to really make sure you have that relationship with your veterinarian to know, so you can plan ahead for that. The palpation goes off of palpating through that rectal wall for changes in the uterus that happen during pregnancy, right? So you can imagine as gestation goes on, those changes are going to look different. And one of those things is the size of the fetus, right? And a veterinarian can tell what stage of pregnancy based off of the size of the fetus. So if you are a producer that needs to know like potential calving dates, right, or gestational age, that can be determined with palpation. As you can imagine, calf sex is not able to be determined by palpation. That's something that is only determined, or can be only determined by ultrasound. And so that's if you needed to know that information, then you'd have to go that route, right? Or you'd have to work with a veterinarian and make sure that you get ultrasound done. The fetal age can be determined as well, of course, with ultrasound by a lot of different ways, whether the veterinarian is measuring crown rump length or the size of the head, or there's multiple ways that they are able to determine gestational age with an ultrasound. That method, pregnancy can be determined slightly earlier, around 28, 30 days, again, is variable based off of the veterinarian and maybe when they want to start that, but because it works on visual cues, right, and not dexterity, some of those changes are able to be seen visually on the ultrasound earlier in gestation. So an ultrasound works by ultrasound waves bouncing off or not bouncing off of structures. So bone is dense, so that developing calf and the bone of that developing calf is dense. So those ultrasound waves bounce back, and that structure is going to appear white versus the fluid. If there's not a developing calf there, there's no bone to bounce back. Those ultrasound waves are going to pass through it, and so those visual cues allow that technology to be used and pregnancy to be determined just slightly earlier in gestation. There's a few other things that might be helpful for producers that are only able to be seen maybe with or utilize versus with an ultrasound versus palpation. If the fetus is live or dead, that's something that a veterinarian can tell a heartbeat on an ultrasound. So that's something that can be helpful to know too. But the main things I think that we've already hit on, right? Calf sex is something that is, if that piece of information is necessary, an ultrasound is. That's where the flow chart leads is to ultrasound and finding a veterinarian that can ultrasound and that is going to work with you on that is going to be key there. So
And there's lots of different skill sets, like you said, with teams and clinics out there. So, maybe they're excellent palpators, right? And you've never had a problem of, getting those pregnancies detected and aging them with that. And so, like you said, it's that conversation. Some of the other benefits of maybe trying ultrasound for the first time could be that earliness, right? So you could possibly do it, 28, 30 days roughly if you really want to. It gets easier the farther out we get. 45, 50, 60 days, but we still have a timeline to try to maybe do that before, let's say, 100 days, when that pregnancy gets a little bit bigger and you won't be able to see as much of the things that you mentioned.
Right.
And
And
one of those could be like twins, for example, right?
sure.
Like that'd be another thing that I think is kind of tricky, maybe to get on palpation at an early age, but pretty easy on ultrasound to see.
And a consideration too, like you mentioned, that difference. We mentioned the example of AIing and then turning bulls in 10 days later, right? That's fairly common to turn cleanup bulls in a week, 10 days, however long your interval is. Technically, you could have calves developing that are a week or 10 days apart. And that difference in gestational age gets harder to determine the further along that pregnancy gets, right? And so that's a benefit too. If it's important for a producer to know AI pregnancies from natural service pregnancies, that's something to really stay on top of and determine that earlier can work for your benefit from a marketing standpoint, but also is much easier for your veterinarian as well to be able to do that accurately earlier in gestation.
Yes, that's one of the things I like to pay attention to when market reports come out, or like when you're going to a sale, right? You'll see AI. So, we're talking about artificial insemination all on one day, right? So we when you want that kind of data going into your preg check, like you started out saying with those goals of, I turned out my cleanup bulls 10 days later. The vet, that's helpful for the vet to know, but it also might be helpful for them to say, okay, I want to be there between day 50 and 60, then, so that I can pick up those. And then maybe it's a case then that the bulls have not been pulled 30 days ago, but you'll have the opportunity to recheck those opens. And in a year like this, that might not be a bad thing to do just because you can get those quality or maybe marketable pregnancies on the books, right? So you'll know what your AI preg rate is, you'll know what your first service conception rate is, and then you can worry about the ones that are second and third cycle at a later time. And so those things all go in together, like you said, with the marketing of them, if you're selling them, even just the management of them. So let's say we want to keep our pregnants out on grass, but we're gonna bring our quote unquote opens into the lot for another 30 days, and then we'll recheck them and figure out how to go about marketing those after that. So one other thing that we haven't talked about yet is using the data. So if we talk about a little bit of the pregnancy rate. If you are using something like artificial insemination, figuring those numbers out would be really important. Some other things to think about would be that pregnancy distribution. So what number of cows are getting bred, between that first and second cycle? Some of those animals might be the numbers that. If you only want to calve for, let's say, 60 days, if we're not getting animals bred up in that time frame, what are some of those fertility efficiencies that you have done some research on? Are any of those numbers helpful when you're looking at cows or heifers?
This is one area that, like you mentioned, I've got involved with some research in this very early. Like, it did some work in undergrad, and it's something that, it's never my interest in that has never stopped, right? And how we can push the needle in our herds to be more efficient. And so, like, calving distribution or breeding distribution is something that I feel like I love to talk about always, and it's something I get kind of excited about, because just like you said, it's important that we find the late calvers, but find them as early as we can, because if we don't have to put money into them from a feed perspective or labor perspective, all of that expense stops, if we identify late calvers and who's maybe costing our operation efficiency. So finding those calvers early. Ideally, if there's kind of an ideal to shoot for, ideally, we want around 60, 63% of the mature cow herd. So this takes out any first calf heifers, but of the mature cow herd, if 63% of them get bred in that first heat cycle and then calve in the first 21 days of the calving season, that's the ideal we want to shoot for, right? And if you're not at that point, that's totally fine. But there are ways that we can work towards that, and we know that early calvers generally are more profitable, and so we can take steps to work towards that ideal. And one of them is by preg checking, like you mentioned, right? So we can identify who's which cows are getting bred early. On the other side, we really want the majority of our cows, and by majority, I think the benchmark ideal is 96% calving in the first 3 cycles. So that last 4%, if you knew, partially by preg checking, whether that's palpation, ultrasound, whatever, if you knew that 4% that was not going to calve or calve much much later, right? If you knew that 4% right now, or maybe in another month versus in November, December, that can save you a lot on feed costs, and they may be more marketable. We know that as supply and demand changes, there's generally a huge supply of cull cows later in the year, right? So if you can work towards a season where maybe that market isn't as flooded, that can be an advantage, right? Or potentially be an advantage. Or adding value to them, right? If you work out the numbers and that's specific to your own operation of you've identified opens or late calvers, and but more specifically talking about the opens and adding value to them to market them at another time where the market isn't quite so flooded with open animals. These are all decisions that the earlier we can make them, the better, right? The more time we have to look at markets and look at our feed costs and kind of project some of those things, we don't have to make last minute decisions. And so early preg checks help with that, to be able to make all those decisions earlier.
Right. And with the price of corn this year, maybe if you do run those numbers, it is could be profitable to put some weight on them by feeding them that corn. And it might be more profitable to essentially, quote unquote, also walk that corn off of the farm in the form of cattle or weight on cattle versus in a truck. So the opportunity lies, in another benefit of possibly doing that early. But a lot of times vets can be really booked out, right? Like maybe you can only get them once. I think there's, some clinics out here that are booked like 3 months out, and so it's August right now. Let's say we can't get them there sooner this year. We always preg check in November, and that's when we have to stay. So I know there's some blood tests that are available now that might be more producer friendly to utilize to get some of these results. What can you tell us about any of those products that are out there?
Yeah. So the blood tests are, originally there was testing for both hormones and then like pregnancy specific factors, right? So a blood test for pregnancy, or and in the dairy industry, right? They can also test milk, but for our beef herds, of course, we're going to be focused primarily on blood tests, and they do detect changes that are specific to pregnancy. The hormone side of things, right? They would be detecting progesterone, but the caveat there is that progesterone's not produced only during pregnancy. It's produced during a normal heat cycle as well, and so that can be much harder unless you have very good records and maybe test several times. But besides the point, the pregnancy associated factors that those blood tests detect, at this point, are called pregnancy-associated glycoproteins, and so they're pregnancy-specific because they're only produced during pregnancy. And so, if we want a blood test to accurately detect pregnancy, it's pretty imperative that we find something that is only produced during pregnancy, or at least that's the ideal. And so pregnancy-associated glycoproteins, or we shorten that to PEGs, call them PEGs quite often. There's a lot of different PEGs, right? It's not like there's just one glycoprotein. There's several different ones. It's a whole kind of family of molecule. But the way that they work to detect pregnancy is that they're around 25-ish days of gestation. The fetal membrane and the maternal membrane start to come together, right? And so that's the start of forming the placenta, and that's going to be really important for nutrients and oxygen, of course, to travel back and forth from that developing calf to the maternal side of things in the bloodstream. And so that's a normal part of gestation for those membranes to come together. The part that's specific to PEGs is that there's a cell on the fetal side called binucleate giant cells. And that cell actually fuses with one cell of the uterus, so a uterine, single uterine cell, and they form a new cell. And so when that happens, that new cell then kind of dispenses, or I should say, releases these PEGs, right? They're produced in that binucleate giant cell and they're released. And when they're released, then they can cross from the fetal bloodstream to the maternal bloodstream. And so by taking a blood test on that mature cow or that heifer, you're able to pick up those glycoproteins that they're produced by part of the placenta and they travel throughout the whole bloodstream. So again, pregnancy specific in that they're only produced during pregnancy by that placental, and then able to be picked up in circulation. So that's a way that they're pregnancy specific and also pretty, like you said, user-friendly as far as being able to take a blood sample to detect that. There are several different tests for PEGs, right? And whether they are sent into a lab or not, there's even on-farm options for producers to be able to detect pregnancy. The consideration for these, I guess, is that when we talked about the flowchart of questions that maybe we need to think about as far as what pregnancy detection method would work best for our operations, they're only going to give a yes or no answer, right? So nothing about fetal age or fetal sex. That information isn't going to be answerable with a blood test, right? It's going to say pregnant or open, which is still very valuable information, right? But if you're a producer that needs to know fetal age, for example, or fetal sex, the fetal age can be answered a little bit if we time this correctly, right? So if you were a producer that AI'd and you wanted to know all of the AI pregnancies, timing it to where you would take blood samples to where it was able to detect the AI pregnancies, but maybe those natural service pregnancies would be too young, and you wouldn't be able to detect those by blood. There are manufacturer instructions, right, on these to make sure we follow, but roughly around 28 days of gestation, pregnancy can be detected with these blood tests. So the other consideration with these is that those PEGs are kind of a molecule that have a long half-life. So what that means is that they stick around in the bloodstream for a while, and they slowly start to the concentrations start to drop, right? And so we have to time it to where they peak, pretty much right before a cow is going to give birth. But they're still going to be in circulation after she gives birth. So obviously she's not pregnant, but they're still in circulation. And so making sure that if you're a producer that's interested in this, timing it correctly so where they're not too soon postpartum that they're going to be picking up maybe residual, right, or PEGs that are still in circulation, but being helpful in a situation where maybe you do want to identify AI pregnancies before those natural service pregnancies would be old enough, right? So in a resynchronized situation or timed correctly, early in the breeding season for AI versus bull bred pregnancies, definitely can be helpful and provide some very great information, right? We just have to have all the information and make sure we follow follow the instructions, right, for the manufacturer or for the lab that does them, because they know exactly when these tests are most sensitive, and that's going to make the most accurate result, right? So make the most accurate information for your herds.
How long after calving do those stick around?
It's not a black and white, right? And again, like there's manufacturer considerations, and they give you they make it black and white because they've done the tests on we want you to use it this far postpartum. But it's a pretty big curve, and they can hang around for as long as 50, 60 days, but it's so animal dependent, right? And so that's not a it's not a black and white answer, right? There's not a black and white answer to that, but following the manufacturer instructions is going to be most important there, because the concentrations that need to be around to pick up a positive, right? That's going to change. So just because they're there, maybe the concentration isn't high enough. So there's a lot of considerations there, and it's a yeah, definitely something that we have to be aware of, right? To be able to use them and use them accurately. But they can be very helpful. The other
Sure.
maybe consideration for them too is the extra, when a veterinarian comes to palpate or ultrasound and that animal's in the chute, you're going to know pregnant versus open right then and there, right? And you can sort out of the chute. With a blood test, that might not be right away out of the chute. Even if you do an on-farm test, it does take time to run that test. And so that maybe means resorting, having to run those cattle through and resort them pregnant versus open. So again, good, bad, or otherwise, right? Just something to consider and plan for if it's something that you want to use on your operation.
Sure. And like you're talking about, maybe they stick around after calving. But let's also say, they could also stick around after maybe a pregnancy is lost, for example, right? So
Yeah.
there is an opportunity for some false positives in that regard, right?
Depending on, yeah, the research in this area kind of it says it depends on the stage of gestation, right? How long they might stick around, because they're at their highest concentration as pregnancy goes on, right? And so again, no black and white answer, because each cow is different in that way. But the research in that, you're right, the research would say that is also the case. But depending on the stage of gestation, it can vary too, as far as how long they'd stick around.
Right.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's an opportunity to use it on, a small group of rechecks or at the beginning of the breeding season, like you said, check which ones you have AI'd. I know sometimes we don't always have enough bulls to go into every small little group of cows. And so, if you have an idea of these are my bred ones in the first 21 days or from AI or from the bull, however you want to look at it, and then you can possibly move that bull off to another pasture too. But like you said, it
Right.
does take some time. The ones that I have done, taking the blood sample is the easy part, and then you kind of have a little bit of a lab set up, right, to possibly do it at home. But they are pretty producer friendly, so don't be afraid to try them if you can't get the vet out, or if you do have a couple critters in the chute that you want to grab a blood sample off of, you can hopefully try it yourself.
Or if you've got a group of recips that you would rather them be pregnant to a bull, right? But you want to check to make sure if they're carrying that embryo, or yeah, like you said, there's lots of different management or kind of production scenarios where they can be helpful, if timed right, and then we take the time to use them correctly.
Right. But it's just as good as, figuring out the data that you want from the ultrasound or the palpation, right? You have to dedicate yourself to hopefully using that data. I've heard arguments of, I don't like preg checking or I don't want to preg check, right? Like I just figure out at the end of the year, to, the efficiency side of that. I think if you don't want to preg check, then you probably need to dedicate yourself to possibly selling some of those late calvers at some point. whether it's calving into a certain time or just figuring it out later to say, okay, I only want to calve for 60 days and then everything else is going to town. That's another management strategy I have heard.
Yes, and I've heard the same where kind of being disciplined to you might run the bull for longer, but being disciplined to only keep those in your herd that get bred in a certain window because you have identified a market for those bred animals that they fit someone else's calving window, but even though they don't necessarily fit yours, right?
Right. What about when, let's say, like things go bad, right? Say, like, let's say we do have a preg check and we have a lot of opens. We maybe already pulled the bull. We don't necessarily want to turn him back out for a spring calving operation. Is there opportunity for, fall calving, or I don't want to say even late summer calving? To have a little bit of a break in there and try something different in a year like this when it's dry, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's an economist here at NDSU. His name's John Biermacher, and he is incredible to listen to if you ever he's been on several podcasts, and so I also enjoy listening to him. And he says that economics is basically choices, and that applies to this situation too, because the choice of maybe keeping those opens and rebreeding them for a different season, right? That's one decision. Or maybe keeping them and adding value to them, knowing that you're still going to sell them. That's another decision, right, to be made. The fall breeding scenario, I think in general we're seeing more of that. But I think it is dependent too on how many opens you have, right? And setting yourself up from a labor and facility perspective, for a fall calving season is a big consideration. And depending on how many opens you have or how many you'd be able to kind of shift to that breeding season might make that decision for you. And again, I'm going to be talking like an economist and I'm not one, but all of this is opportunity cost as well, right? So what's the opportunity cost of I keep this female and expose her for fall breeding and go through a fall calving season? What's my labor worth? What's the it that from a feed perspective, are you able to source feed? All of that is worth something, and the what that's worth changes from producer to producer, right? So some producers might be willing to go through that or plan a fall calving season for fewer than another producer, right? So that's something that I find so interesting is like the decision-making process on that and how it might change from producer to producer. But I think number of open females dictates a lot of that when we talk about fall calving, because sometimes we maybe think about then we get into a cycle of, well, if they come open for the fall herd, do you roll them again into the spring, right? And it can be kind of a slippery slope. And we do want to keep focused on reproductive efficiency and be diligent to that. But that doesn't mean that we can't do that in both the spring and fall season by any means.
Sure. And I have also heard, it gives my bulls another opportunity to work on another group of cows. And so you had brought up in there though some good comments on your labor and facilities. And so back to utilizing the data, whether it's from an ultrasound or a palpation preg check, whatever your preg check data is coming from, if we set ourselves up for success, we might want to manage those early calvers different than our later calvers. And the ones that may, let's say, calve within a 30-day window, maybe we put those ones closer up to the facility if we're calving, let's say, in January and February. But if you're not going to calve till April or May, maybe it doesn't make as much of a difference in the Northern Plains when a lot of us are calving in dry lots in the early winter and springtime, you could say, but then we have a lot of grass calvers when April comes around, and they do just fine out there not sorting. So, those are some things to think about
Yeah,
as well.
I think from a From growing up raising sheep and getting involved into cattle later as a high schooler, that's something that I feel like as a sheep producer, that's second nature because a lot of times they are going through a barn, right? And keeping those that are close to lambing, right? We keep them close, and knowing that is important. Something that we can transition really well to the cattle industry. And depending on no matter the time of year, right? If it's cold in February, but also maybe if you're dealing with a lot of mud in April, or as you get later in calving and thinking about how long you've been calving and those calves that are born later maybe being potentially exposed to more pathogens on the same calving ground, right? So no matter what time of year you're calving, it's worth knowing who's going to calve when, and if your facilities do allow that separation, right? It can make the workload less for you. And I think the last research I read on labor was that during calving season, producers check every hour and a half to 6 hours, right? It depended on the producer, right? But potentially
Right.
calving checks could happen every hour and a half to 6 hours. So that's anywhere from 4 to 15 times a day. And again, producers value their time differently. But
Right.
regardless, that even if you think of 30 minutes at a time for a calving check, that's 2 to 7.5 hours a day just in calving checks, if everything goes right and you're only there for 30 minutes. So
Right.
if you can shorten that to where, like you said, we're only calving for 60 days, by the time calving season gets to day 80, are you, honestly ask yourself, are you as diligent in calving checks as you were on day 10, right? So that's again another piece that maybe we don't look at as closely, or maybe forget to value our time at when it comes to calving season and how preg checks kind of fall into that.
Right. I always think people are anxious to turn the bull out, let's say, when they see that first cow riding, or they're ready to go postpartum, but really better to consider, when do I really want to start my calving season versus how long I'm going to go, because exactly that, by day 90, you're usually burnt out or planting crops in the spring,
Seasons overlap.
Right. Yeah, it's not combine fever like in the fall when, oh, I can't pull the bull because I'm out here combining. And then in the spring, you're like, oh, I can't check cows because I got to plant. It's just a cyclical cycle if you have a farm and ranch that you're trying to manage together, which is a lot of the case up here. So anything else that you can think of that you want to mention right away?
The a little bit more maybe on the piece of if you do have opens or late breds, but more specifically opens and how to add value to them. We did talk about this some, and that there's seasonality to markets when it comes to opens, and if can be really the return on the investment of taking a hard look at penciling out what are the markets like for selling an open cow right now versus what would they be like in 3 to 4 months, and what would my feed cost be to keep her for 3 to 4 months? Does that extra value potentially exceed that feed cost that you might have? And that's going to change year to year, right? But it's worth the time, to go through that. And it might be worth the time depending on how many you have too, right? That might change, like we mentioned. But the other option that maybe we don't think about, and again, this is something that I've heard John Biermacher talk on quite a bit, is that selling at that open cow versus replacing her with like buying a bred animal, so a bred heifer or a bred cow to replace her with, looking at the markets and knowing what that bred animal is going to cost you and what that open animal is going to bring you at either now or in a few months, right? Those are just those comparisons that are pretty black and white, which is something that I tend to like when something is black and white and I can make a decision. But regardless, knowing we're talking about preg checking and knowing whether she's open as soon as you can, that's going to give you the most flexibility to look at all of these marketing options, and not just be forced to to kind of be in a corner of, okay, I either sell her now or I have to come up with feed, right? So the earlier you're faced with this decision, the more flexibility you have to make a decision that's best for your operation.
Yeah, and if we knew what the markets were going to do every year, this would be
That's right.
easy.
That's right. And you know, what might pencil at a market like today might be different than next year's market, right? Or what you're sometimes it's just a logistic decision of hauling them to town today might be logistically easier, and that's okay, right? Like a that's a fair decision to make, right? And something that it's going to be different from operation to operation. Like
Right.
logistics, logistics play a big part in this too, right? And it's not just if I can make $30 a head, but logistically, it's going to be really tough, right?
Right. Yeah, that's really good portion to talk about is the labor. You know, we tend to have a lot of, you know, one or two man teams, man and woman teams out there. Right, you know, and maybe it's taking a trailer load now, or you know, versus you know everything at one time, but it could, you know, it just because you did it one way every year doesn't mean you can't change that this year. You know, I know I've seen some prices on some bred heifers, you know, coming for delivery pretty early, right? You know, like October delivery. You know, maybe if you do have the feed available, you'd identify your cows are open. You know, you might be able to lay in some bred females to replace them earlier in the season than you would maybe traditionally think about those bred cow sales coming in December and January. You know, obviously there's probably some tax things to think about, and how you're going to replace those. And I am not the person to talk about that at all. But you know, just those type of things. Like if you know, like you said, you have some mature cows that are open, but we have some younger bred females available at the right price, that we can join into our herd earlier than later. Maybe that's the route you go this year too.
And even, you know, they might not be a bred heifer. Maybe it's a bred 3, 4 year old that didn't fit another calving window but fits yours, right? Again, not knowing history can play into logistics for a lot of folks. And whether or not you want to bring in outside animals also plays into this decision, right? But it's an option, right? And an option that we can consider. So not saying there's always a right or wrong to that decision, right, or
No.
that question, but I think it's definitely something that we can take a hard look at.
Right. Yeah. So to kind of summarize all of this, right? It depends on your goals, starting out with, you know, what your goals are to get out of the preg check, communicating those with your management team, including your veterinarian, you know, maybe your obviously your family operation or you know, even the bank to say, you know, this is my plan this year. You know, how does that all work out, and how are we going to get it done when the days are getting shorter? Harvest is starting earlier than normal, possibly in some regions of the country. And I always don't want to forget to mention that, you know, there's lots of other people, you know, going through the similar thing. You know, they're not always in your backyard, but don't be afraid to ask those advisors, you know, for advice. You know, maybe there's someone else who has extra grass or feed, or you know, maybe a different off a season from you, that some of those later calvers could fit right into and secure some of that marketing plan right away.
Yeah, definitely.
So with that, is there anything else new in the repro world you want to share with us? And it can be anything from technology to whatever's on your radar. We want to hear it.
Well, this goes back to always being interested in calving distribution, but I follow the or tend like to follow, I guess I don't always do a great job at it, but I'm always looking at the research that's out there on how can we identify the females that are going to be most efficient, right? I think it's such an important could be such an important or would be such an important question to have answered before they even become like replacement heifers, right? And so that's everything from, you know, knowing who they came out of as a cow and physiologically what she how has she performed, right? and what her calves are like, all the way down to what the ovaries on those heifers look like and some of the research that's out there on that. So that's really a lot that I follow, just because I always want to push that efficiency needle, I guess, and love talking about that. And but it all starts with knowing when your cattle get pregnant to begin with. So it's a good kind of full
Yes.
circle moment for this discussion, in that we can push the needle as much as we want on the front side, but we still need to determine who actually becomes pregnant and who's open and when they're getting pregnant. I think that's, if anything, that we can take away from this conversation, the yes or no answer is a great start. But if we can, if we can get to a point where we're focusing a lot on when those cattle are becoming pregnant, I think that's always a great goal to work towards. So if that's something that you've not previously implemented in your operation, maybe think about that this year. Taking a hard look at what percentage of the herd gets pregnant when.
Sure. And then if you are picking genetics, let's say based off of the cows that get bred early, or there is that research behind them that heifers specifically too that are breed early their first year are more likely to continue breeding early for consecutive years. And so maybe there's a couple hard years where you got to be harder on your herd, and eventually that should pay off of lowering the percentage open. Nationally, what is our open percentage on mature cows? Do you know right now?
Nationally, off the top of my head, I don't know. Let's see here. In North Dakota, last year our pregnancy rate was 96% here in North Dakota, for a whole season, of course. And that's mature cows and heifers combined. But that's what our farm business management folks put together for us for the last year. But nationally, I don't have that in front of me.
Sure. So, but roughly 4% opens, in a herd. And so,
Sure.
if you're not trying to shorten your calving season by any means, everything stayed the same, trying to find what percentage open you had last year, maybe, compare it to this year, see if things are getting better. If they're not, what can we try to look at and
Right.
try to dedicate that self yourself to that. And, maybe it's picking up the phone and, like I said, talking to someone who does, even genetic testing to try to help select those heifers. I know that's new and maybe not everyone has tried it. And if you're a seed stock operation, that's one thing, but there is commercial tests available out there as well that if you want to
Right.
give it a try, maybe that's something you could try too.
Right. And I think it's kind of interesting how everything we've talked about, none of it is possible unless you keep records. Anything from a breed date to now thinking about replacement heifers, right? And pushing the reproductive efficiency needle. If your veterinarian says, "I'm happy to come preg check for you, they need to be this many days," if you don't have records on when you turned bulls in or when you pulled bulls or when your AI date was, like, it all starts with records. If you want to use the blood test, right? Knowing how far out they need to be. That's a great point to end on too, is that none of this is possible with unless we have some records, right? And they don't have to be extensive, but they have to be able to answer the questions for your operation that when you do want to make management decisions, you've got the information there to back those decisions up.
Right. And there's lots of Excel spreadsheets out there, that can help. There's even some pretty nice technology, quote unquote, or software that people can use to kind of have whole herd management. But you can do it as simple as making your own spreadsheet. At SDSU Extension, we do have what we call a beef management and reproduction scorecard. That's available on our extension website. It's been there for years since Dr. Perry worked on it, but it has a really good definitions of simple things like we're talking about that you can calculate. So what numbers do you need for calving percentage? What numbers do you need for pregnancy percentage? Because if we're looking at maybe, like you said, just like one season versus the whole year. Pregnancy percentage, you maybe forget about those cows that were exposed, but maybe they didn't make it through the breeding season even. Those should be accounted for in that percentage. And in South Dakota, there's some record keeping programs that folks will utilize more on the number side. But we don't have necessarily a quote unquote spa, I don't think, as similar as what North Dakota, might have. So I tend to use that or those numbers quite a bit. But if you guys have any questions or want help calculating these, feel free to reach out to either of us. Or there are several folks on the livestock economic side here at SDSU Extension as well that can help you just make your own benchmarks for your own operation, right? Like,
Right.
doesn't have to be totally compared to everyone, even in your state. You just want to compare yourself from year to year, because without that knowledge, you necessarily can't know what you need to change.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, that has been, a pretty good overview, I think, of the options. All depends on your goals. I know everyone is busy. Seasons of life. If you have, I don't want to say like a rainy day or an off weekend, right? Maybe that's something you can sit down at your next family meeting and calculate just a couple of those numbers, because weaning season will be here before we know it. Obviously, that's always a good time to preg check as well when you're pulling the calves off. So don't be afraid to call your vet early and figure out when he can or she can get there, and we can get these numbers rolling. And that might be one way to save a little bit of heartache, maybe, or a little bit of quick decision making later in the fall when we really have to make those decisions.
Right.
So.
I'm always a person that needs more time than most, it seems like, to make decisions. So the earlier we can start thinking about them, the better.
Awesome. So, Lacey, how would someone contact you if they have questions on any of this or anything else?
Yeah, feel free. Always enjoy talking to producers. My email is lacey.quail@ndsu.edu. Feel free to give the North Central Research Extension Center a call. They can get a hold of me then there too. So look forward to it.
Awesome. And you can find our contact information on the SDSU Extension website as well, which is extension.sdstate.edu. And we will hopefully have a good rest of our summer season. And until next time, we hope you all eat beef.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.